Welcome to Onc Live On Air. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Kevin Kalinske, MD, MS, FASCO, about the evolving treatment paradigm for hormone receptor-positive breast cancer post-CDK4/6 inhibition, as well as the need for more advanced therapies to improve patient outcomes in this setting. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Kalinske discussed combination therapies that have shown promise for the management of HR-positive breast cancer following endocrine therapy, factors influencing treatment selection for patients who have received prior CDK4/6 inhibition, best practices for genomic testing in this population, and breast cancer research highlights from the 2025 ESMO Congress.
In recent years, we've seen a plethora of trials and agents evaluated in that post-CDK4/6 inhibitor setting in the HR breast cancer space. So what has really driven the need for that research to improve strategies in that setting?
There has been a need for us to have additional endocrine-based treatments along with targeted therapies that could really improve how patients do post-CDK4/6 inhibition with endocrine therapy, which we commonly give as frontline therapy. And so the need is demonstrated by the fact that for some time, including recent studies like PostMONARCH and others, we've had a challenging time with that second line of therapy going beyond 6 months. And what's been exciting is that we've seen some recent data where we can exceed that, often with combinations. But that's been the real need, is having agents that do better than what we've historically had.
In the past few years, we've seen different approvals for these targeted therapies, for these novel endocrine agents, and I know more are on the way too, especially post-ESMO. So given all the options now and some that are coming down the pipeline, what are some of the factors that are informing that treatment selection in that post-CDK4/6 inhibitor setting?
When we're giving agents after frontline CDK4/6 inhibitor endocrine therapy, these decisions are based upon a few things. What's the cadence of disease? Was that patient on that frontline therapy for 6 months? Or were they on it for 3 years? You know, those patients who are on for a short period of time get worried of, oh, how endocrine sensitive is their tumor really? And do we need to pivot with a different sort of approach like capecitabine or an antibody drug conjugate, depending upon what's going on? Does the patient have bone-only disease or visceral disease? And is that visceral disease really starting to take off? So I think those are important considerations, but then also the genomics, right? Do patients have ESR1 mutations? Because we have the approval right now of 2 single agent oral selective estrogen receptor downregulators. Does the patient have a PI3K AKT pathway alteration? Yes, we have approval for fulvestrant plus capivasertib. So it's those sort of considerations that do influence what we give second line.
My next question was about testing for those types of alterations. What are all the considerations for when and how often to do that testing?
I would say the most important time when one is thinking about doing it at the time of diagnosis of metastatic disease is really when you have a patient who is in a novel 120 candidate, right? They have endocrine therapy that they received in the early stage setting. They recurred on or within 12 months of said endocrine therapy. And if they have a PI3K mutation, then I would argue that the standard of care is, at this point, fulvestrant plus palbociclib plus inavolisib, which is a PI3K inhibitor, as we've seen now overall survival benefits from that particular trial. Otherwise, it is very important that you've at least done genomic testing at the time of progression on that frontline endocrine therapy plus CDK4/6 inhibition, because of the fact that we have targeted therapies based upon the mutational profile.
And turning to ESMO a little bit, I know we saw some updated data on some of these ongoing trials, including Victoria-1 and a few others. Well, what were some of the key data that kind of stood out to you in your mind?
ESMO 2025 was a very good meeting that had data across all of our subtypes of breast cancer. From the metastatic ER-positive setting, we saw some interesting data. We saw data with gedatolisib, which is a PI3K mTORC1, mTORC2 inhibitor. These were for patients with PIK3CA wild-type disease. where we saw that giving this agent along with endocrine-based therapy was better than giving endocrine-based therapy by itself, in this case, fulvestrant. And also the triplet of giving along with palbociclib was numerically even better. But, you know, I think the reason that those data were quite interesting is that we saw a really nice median progression-free survival in both of those arms, though slightly better with the triplet compared to the doublet, with the understanding that the side effects of that drug include stomatitis, and you do need to monitor for blood sugar, but then also that the drug is given intravenously 3 weeks on Momigov. Okay, it's not an oral drug, it's IV. And then the other interesting study that we saw was the Avera study, which was for patients who were randomly assigned to fulvestrant plus endocrine-based treatment, of which a good proportion of them had fulvestrant plus everolimus, versus giredestrant, which is an oral selective estrogen receptor downregulator, along with everolimus. In the take-homes from that studies, we saw a very nice median progression-free survival favoring the giredestrant arm. There was a benefit in the intent-to-treat population as well as those who have ESR1 mutations. In a smaller exploratory analysis, they did not see benefit for those who are ESR1 wild-type, though I did mention that the ITT population was positive. So we'll see ultimately if the drug gets approved and what the indication will be. But the other thing just to note is that there were really no added toxicities with giredestrant. A lot of the toxicities were due to the everolimus like stomatitis. And so those were, I would say, in terms of larger randomized studies, drugs that will likely lead to approvals for our patients in terms of therapeutics and clinic.
Based on all this research coming out, all the agents that have been approved already and some that are coming down the pipeline, how does this kind of underscore the need for a personalized approach in this setting just to make sure patients are getting the optimal therapy just based on all the factors that we've talked about?
Yeah. I mean, I think what's been clear is that after frontline therapy, it's complicated, right? We have different options available. Do you switch to endocrine therapy and give a CDK4/6 inhibitor? Do you do fulvestrant plus capivasertib? Do you give an oral selective estrogen receptor downregulator? Right now, it's approved as a single agent. Will we have access to giving, for instance, imlunestrant plus abemaciclib based upon the EMBER-3 data, where we saw benefit regardless of mutational status by ESR1, and then also a median progression-free survival that exceeded 9 months? And so, you know, ultimately, this is going to be an ever-evolving field. We always need to do what's best for our patients, and that includes how long were they on their prior therapy? They have endocrine-sensitive disease. How aggressive is it? Where are the sites? What are the patient's comorbidities? The patient have significant diabetes? Are they going to be able to tolerate something like capivasertib? And so what I would also say is how we're treating patients in 2025 is going to be different in subsequent years because we're having additional agents like more selective PI3K and AKT mutation inhibitors. We're also having specific CDK inhibitors. And so what's going on now is only going to continue to evolve.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.